Welcome to Letters to a Young Mormon, a limited series from the In Good Faith team at BYU Radio. I'm the host, Stephen Cap Perry. We hope you've been enjoying this reading of Adam Miller's 2013 collection of epistolary essays, Letters to a Young Mormon. Storyteller Sam Payne is the voice of the narrator, called A, who considers the difficult questions of his younger friend, S. And now, Letter 7, titled Sabbath.
Dear S, if you're not careful, you'll live your life from front to back. You'll start at the beginning and stop at the end. Drawn along by your hopes and fears, you'll spend your whole life waiting to see how your story is going to end. Will you get what you wanted? Will you have fame and success? Will you marry and have children? Will you live happily ever after? Will you make it into the celestial kingdom? Will you be saved? Your life will turn into a waiting room. Don't live like this. God doesn't want you to live time in order. He doesn't want you to wait until the end to be happy. This is what the Sabbath is for. The Sabbath is God's way of interrupting our lives. It's His way of interrupting time, of breaking its spell. With the Sabbath, God introduces a hiccup into time, a beat of stillness, a little pocket of eternity. The Sabbath is the end. It celebrates the end of God's work. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, God tells Moses. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work. Exodus 20:8-10. Time's wheel relentlessly spins, driving us forward, whetting our fears, stoking our appetites. But every seventh day, God puts out His hand and stills it. Be still, be quiet, rest. With the Sabbath, God makes the end arrive early. In fact, with the Sabbath, He makes the end arrive every 7 days. For thousands of years now, He's made the end arrive early, again and again, hoping that we would catch on and see the light. The Sabbath isn't meant as just a short rest from our endless work. It's meant to show us something more basic. It's meant to show us how to do all our work as a form of rest. It's meant to show us how to enter full time and without further delay into what Alma calls the rest of the Lord. Alma 13:16. The Sabbath is a door that opens onto a new experience of time. Aristotle argued that we can't ever be sure that anyone is good or happy until after they're dead. If we haven't died, he said, something could always still go wrong. We could break our vows. We could lose our way. Misfortune might seize us. As Salon famously put it, call no man happy until he is dead. Happiness is always postponed. Failure always looms. But this isn't how God does things. God doesn't wait until the end to take your measure and decide if He wants to save you. He keeps offering to save you right now. He makes this offer over and over, every 7 days. We see this same pattern on a different scale in the Book of Mormon. As Jerem describes it, the Book of Mormon prophets and priests focused on one thing, persuading the people to look forward unto the Messiah and believe in Him to come as though He already was. Jerem 1:11. This is a solid, all-purpose description of what it means to be redeemed. We're redeemed when we look forward to Christ by living as though He had already come again. The only way to look forward to resting in God's presence is to rest in God's presence now. It doesn't matter whether we're waiting for Christ's first or second coming. Either way, we enter into the rest of the Lord by practicing a sabbatical way of life. Instead of waiting for Jesus to come and the world to end, we live life out of order. We let the end arrive early. We let the end arrive every week. We let the millennium begin now. We take the Sabbath as a gate that, every week, lets more and more of eternity stream into time until the whole of life is flooded with God's rest. In this sense, every Sabbath is a miniature end time, a tiny eschaton, a local second coming where we practice collectively living as though Christ had already come. Our Sabbath practice is meant to match God's own approach to His work of creation. In Genesis 1, God sets about creating the world. He works for 6 days. Then, on the seventh day, God ended His work which He had made, and He rested on the seventh day. Genesis 2:2. More, God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it He had rested from all His work which God created and made. Genesis 2:3. This kind of rest is characteristic of God, and once He has blessed it, this kind of timeless rest becomes characteristic of the Sabbath itself. At the end of the sixth day, God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good. Genesis 1:31. But notice, too, that God doesn't wait until after His work is done to declare that it is good. He's not like Aristotle. He doesn't wait until after the world is created. He doesn't wait until the official end has passed. Even while the world is unfinished, even while the world is still half-baked, imperfect, and incomplete, God already saw that it was good. Genesis 1:10. Every day He sees that world is good. This is the way God works. In God's way of working, the goodness we expect to find only at the end, the rest we've been hoping to enter at the finish, is always bleeding right back into the middle and the beginning. From God's point of view, life is itself a working sabbatical, where each task is already seen as good because each job has become an end in itself. Each job is already good because it's something worth doing for its own sake. This is the heart of what it means to keep the Sabbath day holy. On the Sabbath, we do things for their own sake. We do the work that we do out of love. And then, hopefully, we carry this way of working back from our brush with eternity and into the busyness of time. As God sees it, though the Sabbath is just one day appointed unto you to rest from your labors and to pay thy devotions unto the Most High, nevertheless thy vows shall be offered up in righteousness on all days and at all times. Doctrine and Covenants 59:10-11. There is a day appointed for rest, a day set aside for worshiping God with all our hearts and minds, a day when we do things out of love for their own sake. But this is just the beginning. The Sabbath day is a practice gym. Ultimately, we are supposed to learn how to work and love like this all the time. We're supposed to learn how to rest and worship on all days and at all times as a way of doing whatever we're already doing. The example used in Doctrine and Covenants 59 couldn't be more ordinary. Regardless of what else we do, everyone must eat. But on the Sabbath, at the far end of time, in the shade of eternity, we are meant to prepare our food and eat our meals as if they were our last. On the Sabbath, we prepare simple meals and eat with focus and gratitude. On this day thou shalt do none other thing, only let thy food be prepared with singleness of heart, that thy fasting may be perfect, or in other words, that thy joy may be full. Doctrine and Covenants 59:13. The Sabbath teaches us how to live. It teaches us how to live each day as if Jesus had already returned and the end had already come. Instead of worrying about tomorrow, we do our work with unbroken attention. We prepare our food with a singleness of heart. And when we work this way, we learn how to rest in our work. When we learn how to rest in our work, that work acquires a halo of perfection. The goodness and perfection that we thought would only come later, long after we had died, begins to color this world as well. Working with a singleness of heart, we forget ourselves and find a fullness of joy. Let thy food be prepared with singleness of heart, that thy fasting may be perfect, or in other words, that thy joy may be full. The Sabbath is made for the sake of joy. Practice living like this, like the world had already ended. Practice living as if time had already stopped, as if every day were the Sabbath. Practice living as if you had all the time in the world to do whatever you were doing, focused, unhurried, unworried. Try making a loaf of Sunday bread. Go slow. Be patient. Try baking eternity into time. Get out a bowl. Dissolve 3 teaspoons of yeast in 1 1/4 cups of warm water. Add 1 1/2 tablespoons of sugar and 1/2 tablespoon of oil. Stir. Watch for the yeast to froth. Wait. Be still. Don't go do something else. Actually watch. Add 1 cup flour. Mix with a spoon. Add 2 more cups flour, a little at a time, until it's all mixed in. Let the dough rest for a moment while you carefully wash the bowl. Dry the bowl. Grease the sides of the bowl. Dust the counter with flour. Now knead the dough with your own hands. Use the heel of your hand. Keep kneading for 10 minutes. This will seem like forever. Good. Forever is what you're looking for. Keep kneading. Feel the weight of the dough in your hand. Let the dough rise for 1 hour, covered with a cloth. Punch it down. Let it rise again until it has doubled in size. Flatten the dough into a rectangular shape, making the short side about the length of a bread pan. Push hard with your fingers from one end of the rectangle to the other until all the air bubbles pop. Enjoy this. Now, roll the rectangle into a loaf and pinch together the open ends. Put the loaf in a greased bread pan. Cover the pan with a cloth. Let the dough rise again until it has crested the lip of the pan. Bake at 375 degrees for 25 minutes. Let it cool before slicing. Feel what it's like to work the way God does, with singleness of heart, with time pulled inside out. Repeat. Bring the world to an end every 7 days. Repeat. Love. Pay attention. Do things for their own sake. Repeat. Find eternity now, in time. Love, A.
Letters to a Young Mormon, a limited series podcast, is produced by Heather Bigley. Our editor is Josh Orton. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Brandon Lewis, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. The text for this limited series is taken from the 2nd edition of the book, published in 2018 by Deseret Book. Adam S. Miller retains the copyright. This podcast is a production of BYU Radio. I'm your host, Stephen Cap Perry. If interfaith understanding is important to you, tune in to our sister podcast, In Good Faith, committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find In Good Faith wherever you get your podcasts.